Well, good afternoon, everyone. Again, my name is Karen Scherzinger, and I'm with the New Mexico Emerging Infections Program. And the title is a bit of a tongue twister, but essentially what I wanted to share with you today was a project that we undertook to start to understand our data in terms of geographic components. We're really just beginning this process, and we wanted to understand what is it we do with folks that we don't have an exact address match for. So where do we put them, and how do we deal with that? We don't have complete data. I have no disclosures. So let me just first start by talking a little bit about the Emerging Infections Program. This is a CDC-funded 10-state network. You can see the 10 states highlighted in yellow in that map below. And we do active population-based surveillance on about 46 million people. It's about 15% of the U.S. population. And we track certain diseases and organisms, all laboratory-confirmed. And one of these organisms is invasive pneumococcal disease. So our staff does on-site audits of all the clinical microbiology labs in this state, in addition to doing medical chart reviews to abstract data about demographics and underlying conditions, immunization histories, and the like. This is also where we obtain our address information. So for the Emerging Infections Program, our case definition for IPD, or invasive pneumococcal disease, is a culture-confirmed sterile site infection with Streptococcus pneumoniae. So we're talking very serious infections. We're talking bloodstream infections, cerebrospinal fluid, and pleural fluid for the most part. So a little bit of context about this. The literature suggests that place does matter in looking at health outcomes. There's a number of researchers that have shown associations between neighborhood factors and chronic disease, infectious disease, mortality rates, a number of different items. And in a perfect world, we'd all have excellent complete data, but unfortunately, rural states like New Mexico have a hard time geolocating those cases that don't have an exact address. So they may have a P.O. box, but we don't know exactly where they are. New Mexico is really just beginning this process, so we didn't have a clear understanding of what the impact of these cases would be on our data if we started to look at it geographically. So here's a question that we asked ourselves. What was the impact of non-geocoded cases on a regression model evaluating small area level invasive pneumococcal disease in New Mexico? So here's New Mexico. It's a large, mostly rural state. And the map that you see is population density. So our overall population density is about 17 persons per square mile. The U.S. population density is 87. So you can see on our legend there, any of the lightest green color would be below 17 persons per square mile, and it goes up. The darkest color would be above the U.S. population density. You can see there we have a couple of urban centers, four main urban centers. We have a very diverse population. In fact, we're considered a minority-majority state. About 9% of our population is American Indian, and you can see the tribal land with the cross-hatching represented on the map. About 46% self-identify as Hispanic, and about 41% are white, non-Hispanic. Our disease rates for certain infections tend to be higher than U.S. rates or estimates. And in fact, our IPD rate during 2004 to 2009 was about 28% higher than the U.S. rate. So the New Mexico rate was 17 per 100,000 people, whereas the U.S. rate was 14 per 100,000. So I've given you a little bit of information about EIP and New Mexico. Let me talk about this project in particular. So what we did was we had about 2,300 cases of invasive pneumococcal disease between the years of 2004 and 2010. And we geocoded them using ArcGIS 9.3. And we were able to identify a big group that were calling non-geocoded cases. Now, for the most part, we had P.O. box, so we had zip code. So those folks we assigned to the zip code centroid where their P.O. box lay. We calculated rates. I think in my abstract, initially we did block group area, but the population sizes were very small and our rates were very unstable, so we decided to rework this using some small areas that the Department of Health has created for display of health information. So we mapped these rates, and then we obtained the aggregated 2005 to 2009 American Community Survey data to use as predictors in a regression model. So we obtained this information from ACS, and ACS, probably many of you are familiar with it, it contains a wealth of information about demographics, social characteristics, economic characteristics, and we obtained the data at a census tract level, and then we aggregated them to our small areas. So then what we did was we created a regression model, and we did the same model twice with a different outcome variable. So the first model was our economic, social, and household characteristics as predictors. And our outcome variable were the small area rates with those non-geocoded cases removed. And then we did the same model with those non-geocoded cases assigned to their zip code. So here's our ACS variables. We had a number of economic, household, and social variables. Income, poverty, vehicle availability, household size, availability of plumbing facilities is an interesting one to look at. Some folks at the Arctic Investigations Program have found that there is a fairly strong association between lack of plumbing facilities and respiratory infection, and IPD in particular. So some social characteristics. So here's our geocoding results. So we had about 2,300 cases. And we were able to match about 70% of those to an exact address, which we thought was nice, but we were a little dismayed to see that about 30% of our cases we were unable to geographically locate at the address level. So that very small percentage down there, 1%, where we had no match, those were generally folks that had homeless listed in their medical chart, or we didn't have any kind of address for them. So we did exclude those folks. But that other 29% that you see, we did have zip code for, so we were able to place them on a map. And those are the people that we're calling the non-geocoded cases. So who are these people? Well, here's our population density map again, and I've overlain with a proportional circle our non-geocoded cases. So the smallest ones were between 1 and 5 cases, and it goes up from there. And what we can see is kind of a scattering throughout the state, maybe some clustering in the cities, which we would expect since it's cases, not rates. But then we see that there are a number of the largest circles in that northwest corner there, and that's an area with a very low population density. So lots of cases and low population density. So we could probably predict that's going to have an impact on the rates in that area. So when we looked at the non-geocoded cases versus the folks that we were able to match to an exact address, they were different. They were more likely to be non-white, live in a non-urban county, and be younger. So, you know, when we're processing our data for analysis, we can do a couple of things with incomplete data. We can drop it and just say, well, you know, maybe that won't impact things very much. Or we can find some way to include that data, but just realize that this could introduce bias to our results and may not be optimal. So here are our invasive pneumococcal disease rates for the address-matched cases only. So we've dropped a whole bunch of cases for whom we didn't have an address. And we map their rates. And now let me explain our legend here for you. The lightest color you see would be those areas with rates less than the U.S. rate of 14 per 100,000. The ones with the next kind of pinkish color would be those between the U.S. rate and the New Mexico rate. And then any of the darker colors would be those areas with rates greater than the New Mexico rate. So here's what happens when we add these folks back in. And that's a big difference. So whereas when we dropped our cases, it you know, kind of looks like, for the most part, the rates in the state are low or lower than the U.S. rate. But once we add those cases back in, we can see that it looks like most of these areas in the state have higher rates than the New Mexico rate. And in fact, there are some areas that are more than two times the New Mexico rate. So this is the impact of dropping cases. So what we did at this point then was to develop our model. So we used our predictors from the American Community Survey, and we looked at two different models, one with the rates when with the cases dropped and one with them assigned to their zip code. So here is our linear regression model with our cases dropped. And there are four variables which were significant in the model. Two of them were positive, and that was percent no vehicle and percent less in high school. Interestingly enough, there were a couple that had a negative coefficient, so percent of the population that spoke no English and percent with no plumbing. So what that is suggesting is that as the percent of folks with no plumbing or that don't speak English increases in a population, the rates are decreasing, which we found interesting, particularly this no plumbing, given that other folks have found a pretty strong association between no plumbing and respiratory disease. So when we looked at our R-squared, it was 0.43, so about 43% of the variability in rates could be explained by this model. Here's our next model. Once we added these cases back in, we're seeing percent no vehicle and percent no English remain the same. Now we have average household size as a coefficient that's significant. None of the other ones are. Now we have percent no plumbing as a positive coefficient. It's not significant, however. So different results. Our R-squared there is 0.51, so a little bit better than the last model, but not overwhelming. So which model is best? Well, probably neither for the reasons up on the board here. Our selected variables don't seem to predict our rates very well. Our coefficients were pretty small. And our R values suggest that the variables don't explain much rate variability. Because this is count data of a relatively rarely occurring disease, we probably should have used negative binomial regression to adjust for overdispersion of zeros. But we wanted to keep this as simple as possible, so we just used the linear regression model. A couple of limitations for this study are small areas. So I mentioned that initially used block group, that was too small. Then we used these small areas, which as it turns out, were quite big geographically in some areas. So, you know, maybe we went from too small to too big, and that kind of washed out our results a little bit. The zip code centroid assignment can be very problematic. So often this will put a case right smack dab in the middle of nowhere, especially in New Mexico. And, you know, if you look at the map, the satellite picture, you can see this dot in the middle of sagebrush. And then, you know, a couple miles away, maybe on the other side of the line, the small area boundary, you may see a city, which shares the same zip code, which may be a more appropriate place to put this person. So we did not initially account for any spatial statistics in this analysis. So really this was just a first step to an attempt to figure out what do we do with these non-geocoded cases. And I think that we demonstrated pretty clearly that there are repercussions of dropping cases. So I think that we know for sure we're not going to be doing that. And of course we all know that our regression models are only as good as the data that we put into them. So some next steps, what we would like to do now is investigate some other methods of case assignment. So could we be geocoding these people instead of to a zip code centroid, which may be a very large area, put them in the city where their zip code lies? Maybe we could look at some proportional distribution or geoimputation, which would involve, okay, we have a case, we know their race, ethnicity, their age. Would it make more sense to assign that person to, say, a block group or a census tract where there's more of the same people that meet those characteristics? We will rework this using negative binomial regression. And in the future, we will probably try and integrate some spatial statistics, perhaps add a geographic variable, do some more exploratory analysis on what maybe some better variables could be, and do some geographic weighted regression. So that's all I have. I don't know if do we have time now for questions, or should we?
Yes, we do.
Oh, good.
Now, I will take the moderator's prerogative and ask the first question.
Oh.
And I was really curious to know, this is a wonderful presentation, very informative. I was wondering if you can link the vaccination history, particularly of children, to pneumococcal vaccination and include that, too, to see whether that is a determinant. We know it's a determinant.
Yes.
It's a protective factor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, you know, quite interested in knowing if you can link it to the state immunization information system.
Yeah. You know, we'd love to be able to do that, and that is definitely one of the variables, in addition to some racial and ethnic variables, that I'd like to explore adding to the model. We have been working with our immunization program for some other reasons, and we're trying to determine what level we can get immunization data at. Can we get it by county? Can we get it at sub-county level? That might be a very interesting thing to add into the model, and I agree, very important. Yeah. Yeah?
With your, I was just curious why you're missing some of the addresses. Do you review each case?
Most of those are P.O. boxes.
So even though you have the hospital record, all you have is P.O. boxes?
Yeah. Yeah. Hospitals want to know where to send the bill. They don't really care where people exactly live.
They don't care about your stuff.
Yeah. They're ecologic variables. So those are the ones from the American Community Survey.
So,
right, right, yeah.
And could you do it on an individual level? Could you take, well, some of the data?
No, I mean, the majority of that information we wouldn't be able to get from the medical chart. So we could... Not vehicle... We could, you know, maybe take a subset of these cases and call them and, you know, find out. Yeah. Yeah.
For the question of what's an acceptable R-squared, I know that it depends on what you're studying. For some studies, they're really happy if they can get like a 40%.
Yeah. No.
What's the goal that you had in mind?
You know, I was hoping for 60%, but maybe that's unrealistic. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't horrible. But I think, you know, we probably should have put in a little more work up front to find some better variables, and maybe that's reflected in our R-squared.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank
Let's
you.
Give her a round of applause. Fantastic job.